Welcome to Kansas City Cannabis, where local roots and city pride thrive. Whether you're new or seasoned to cannabis, our expert bud tenders offer guidance and a welcoming atmosphere at our four KC locations. Experience genuine service and hometown heart. Visit kccannabis.org for more.
Now it is time for very serious football talk with the man who hates money almost as much as he hates the idea of a healthy sleep schedule.
You will find Seth Kaiser everywhere except for in his or your bed, because not only does he not sleep, he's also a faithful husband. So that's important.
The man who has so many children, his wife figured he wouldn't even notice if she bought a few chickens and ducks for the backyard.
We could have an episode where we just have my children appear on the show.
I would
in
love.
Ascending order. So we'll do like a minute of Lucas, then 2 minutes of Isabel, then 3 minutes of... Man, I have a lot of kids.
The man who does all of this while being a lawyer in a state that has snow all 12 months of the year.
Until it freezes, I'm okay.
Yeah.
I actually felt very at home driving through southern Iowa. It was snow everywhere, and people were slowing down to like 40. It was adorable. I was driving slowly, but I literally was hanging my head out the window screaming, and that was disconcerting.
It's Seth Kaiser of the Chief in the North newsletter, The Athletic, and the Times Hours podcast on Almost Entirely Sports.
Honestly, I am pretty happy and pretty surprised to be having this conversation right now with our dear friend Seth Kaiser of the Chief in the North newsletter, The Athletic, the Times Ours podcast. I'm always happy to talk to you, Seth, but I'm surprised to talk to you because I thought that there was less than a 50 but more than a 10% chance that you were going to throw your phone into the ocean in Florida and just never be heard from again. So I'm glad to have you back in my life, but I hope that you've returned to Minnesota without too much, weather shock or whatever it would be.
You know, it's out of the question that I would throw my phone in the ocean, but only because this wonderful, crazy, sometimes frustrating, sometimes awesome job is part of my hope to one day live by the ocean. And so we'll see how it goes. My wife is still right now looking at properties in Florida.
Wow.
So we'll see. She and I have had a wonderful conversation about the fact that I'm sure living in Florida is very different from vacationing in Florida.
Yeah,
vacation is not like real life.
Right, right, but I could also get you the info to my mom, you know, and let her tell you about how hard it is living by the ocean, because that's what they did. We vacationed down there a few times, and then they're like, "Let's just move," and they did. And I've not gotten from them any big regrets about living by water and not by snow anymore. They seem pretty happy with that particular choice.
Mm-hmm. And that doesn't surprise me. That would be their choice on that, or their decision, their thoughts on. Man, I'm really a wordsmith today.
Yeah, you're crushing.
I'm just coming back. You know, I'm coming back off of IR. I was designated to return. I'm back, but you know, I'm still getting my feet under me.
This is what I would expect. That sort of kind of brain catching up to your mouth kind of thing that, you know, I know nothing about. That kind of mechanism there is exactly what I would expect from someone who just went from 75 degrees and beaches to Minnesota. Like, you are just – you're slowly kind of refreezing after defrosting for a couple of weeks. So I think that's totally reasonable. My pitch – and, you know, I'm pretty sure that maybe we get the sales team here to help us with this, and then I could probably get the all clear from 810, is that we just get, you know, basically a big brother house somewhere by a beach, and we just fill it with USB video cameras and all sorts. We can just stream the whole thing. We have a studio built in. We've got different places we can write. We can do the show. We can just do it on remote every day. We can get all that sponsored. We put a big sponsor. Your ad here is on every wall of the house. And I think that, you know, for the 3 months that we would get past before eventually one of us completely lost it, I think we could make some really good content and also be by sand.
I think I consider me sold.
Okay. All right.
I want to be on a pier somewhere fishing. And, you know, that's just what I would like to do. And it's, you know, we'll see. Maybe one day I did have people rightly point out to me. I think I tweeted out, I was like, could 100,000 people just subscribe already? And I will write 2 articles a day. I will do whatever it takes.
Yeah.
I will provide the best content ever. Just let me live here instead. Or at least be a snowbird. You know, I mean, that's what we call them in Minnesota. People that, you know, they live in Minnesota during the spring and summer, fall months, and then the 6 months of winter or longer, they live in Florida or Arizona or whatever. And the longer I live here, the more I'm like, you know what? That's kind of the way to go, isn't it?
Yeah.
And so the correct response someone had for me, though, is said, yeah, it's kind of going to make the name of your newsletter a little weird.
That's fair. That's a good point.
The chief of the north from Florida.
The chief in the north of the equator, I think, works just fine.
Yeah, that seems easy enough.
That's basically true. Well, if you want to help Seth achieve his basically Jersey Shore-esque dreams, you can go subscribe to the newsletter at mnchiefsfan.substack.com. He'd get there a lot quicker if he wasn't charging $12 a year forever as the price that you could pay to get some of the best content you'll get anywhere around the Kansas City Chiefs. But that's what the price is. And I'll tell you this, if you love anyone in your life, you'll get them a subscription for Christmas or your favorite holiday, whatever it is. My birthday is before Christmas. I don't need an extra subscription for Seth. Actually, in fact, I'm giving one away on Twitter if you want to do that. You can go enter there. But more importantly, just go do it yourself. It's $12 for an entire year. And if you use that same link, bit.ly/SethReallyHatesMoney, you can subscribe with someone else's email, you know, and have it sign up for them. And, you know, tell them happy holidays from the Chief of the North newsletter. And you can give a legitimately great gift that will last an entire year that takes up zero physical space in that person's life. You can give that great gift for $12. As I'm talking about this, Seth, I'm realizing how smart of an idea this is.
I'm just saying, you know, I mean, I'm going to say this, like, right here on the radio where you currently work. The Chief in the North featuring Josh Briscoe doesn't sound too terrible. You're asking me.
I mean, I'm just here to be a spokesperson. This is an almost entirely sports crossover episode sort of thing because I scratch your back, you scratch mine. I make sense of all of this crazy world for people to go get a great Christmas gift, and then you tell me how good Frank Clark has been. That's the back and forth here. That's how the sausage is made.
Oh, you know what? I think I can do that. A little bit of quid pro quo,
yeah,
as it were.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if that's allowed or not, but I think it is.
Yeah, why not? It's Latin, so I'm sure it's okay. So it is. So obviously, you know, the first thing I wrote about this week, and probably I'll only have time to do one more article before the Thursday night game because it's a big one. I'll have time to review Mahomes' snaps, but that's it. Is I reviewed every snap of Frank Clark against the Raiders, which you were no doubt alluding to there.
Mm-hmm.
And he was good. He was really good. And it's been one of the most dramatic turnarounds that I've ever seen for a player.
Yeah, and so I want to know what you think goes into that. And also, I mean, I'm at this point, people almost certainly know. Chris Jones going to the COVID list today with the biggest game of the year, at least with, you know, what we know at this point coming up on Thursday. If Chris Jones, and it seems wildly unlikely that he would play at this point, if he were to miss the game, it puts even more pressure, no pun intended, on the rest of those guys to be able to create pressure. And presumably, with what you saw against the Raiders, Frank Clark has been up for that task this year. So walk me through a little bit of what you thought you were seeing from Frank Clark before you did kind of the deep dive from the Raiders game and why you make that point about the turnaround. And then I want to know what you saw against Vegas.
Sure. So the thing with Clark, and he's gotten a lot of flack, and I don't think there's really any need to walk your dear listeners who through everything that's gone on with Frank Clark over the last, you know, year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
2020 was kind of a down year for him. He was maybe an average type player in terms of impacting the pass rush. But the biggest thing was, for me, he just looked like a different player. And you and I have talked about that before. And I didn't mean that as a colloquialism, but he's just like a different guy. No, he literally was playing like a different player.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have nearly as much explosion off the line, and he wasn't playing with nearly as much functional strength, which was his bread and butter in Seattle. When you watch his film, He had really good functional strength. He had a really good long arm, really good bull rush, and he had good explosion off the line. And that combination of things allowed him to make up for the fact that he doesn't have a ton of bend. He's got a little, and he's got good bounce through contact, which is another thing you need to turn the edge. But he's not a super bendy athlete, and he's not an incredible athlete. And so that first step explosion off the line allowed him to at least threaten the edge, and then his unusual strength allowed him to win with a variety of power moves, and then he built a bunch of counters around that, right?
Mm-hmm.
His spin move, his push-pull. These things were all built around the threat of the long arm or the bull rush or the occasional just rip around the edge, and we just weren't seeing it. He became a really, really good pass rusher by being a very varied pass rusher, mm-hmm. but it was all built around that power and that first step explosion, and we just haven't seen much of that until suddenly we saw it for a stretch of 2019, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then 2020 was a down year. Start off this year was rough. He had a press conference where, and you and I have talked about this before.
Yeah,
he was very open about the physical and mental struggles he's had this
yes.
year, and in my opinion, maybe even last year, he talked about that he'd never really been hurt before in his whole career,
mm-hmm.
and that it was hard for him to not just try to play through the injuries and understand that maybe he was hurting the team by playing unhealthy. And based on the way he's playing now, my response would be, yes, I agree. If that was what kept you from getting fully healthy and playing like this, that was hurting the team a little bit. But now, over the last, I'd say, month and a half, he really does look like a different player from how he's looked from, you know, 2020 on. And he looks a lot more like how he looked in 2018 in Seattle.
It's funny. I'm glad that you specifically mentioned that all the things that we talked about whenever they did make the trade for Clark. I remember asking him about it in his introductory press conference after the press conference. But like, we have a little video that I found as I was going through a bunch of photos and videos and freeing up some space the last couple of days. I was like, oh yeah, that's when I talked to Frank Clark, like day one in Kansas City. And one of the things I asked him about was one of the things that you had talked and written about that you and I had discussed was that varied set of what he was able to do to make things really difficult for the tackles he'd be going up against. And going through this piece from the Raiders game, you were just rattling off, you know, here's the power, or the strong arm, or the push pull, or the occasional rip around the edge. And you've got an example, I think, of all of the things that you mentioned, or very close to all the things that you mentioned, just from this game, which really does mm-hmm. make me feel like there's something sustainable about this. This isn't some sort of fluky return to form for Frank Clark, but this is actually like more of what you saw in Seattle.
Right. And part of that would be that it's been multiple games in a row that he's been playing better,
mm-hmm.
right? And people have noticed. And so that is one reason why, you know, you might think it's more sustainable. But like you said, it's the manner in which it was done that you would at least make you think it's sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that it was against quality competition. Now, the fact that it's Colton Miller actually makes this interesting. So one of the games that I reviewed from 2018 when Clark signed with the Chiefs from when he was still in Seattle was was a game against Colton Miller.
Hmm.
And he just dominated him, just destroyed him. It wasn't even close. It was actually really hysterical. And Miller really struggled in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
In 2019, Clark had a couple of pretty good games against Miller. 2020 did not perform well against him.
Hmm.
And earlier this year didn't really have a particularly like breakout game against him or anything like that. But Miller has become, in the meantime, in the intervening years, a good left tackle.
Hmm.
Like, you know, it's kind of like what happened with Bowles in Denver,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
They both started off their career really rough, and they both developed into pretty good left tackles. I would put both of them maybe in that close to that, you know, like Eric Fisher tier, good, not great players,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And he was able to beat him in a variety of ways over the course of the game, to the point that the Raiders really had to start sending a lot of chips, a lot of help his way, and Spagnuolo then had some adjustments, like, on one particular play, a spin move that everyone oohed and aahed about, lining up Melvin Ingram outside of Clark to kind of force them to try to figure out how to defend, you know, the B gap. And that's what Clark attacked with, a great spin move that just sent Miller sprawling. So despite them trying to do these things, he was still able to make an impact. And so it's just it looks sustainable, certainly, because he won in all these ways that make him certainly look physically healthy.
Yeah.
I think for Chiefs fans, because it's been such a sustained period of time since we've seen Clark perform at this level, and I would argue the current level he's playing at, Even his stretch in 2019, I'm not sure was quite as good consistently as what he's doing here. That was a lot of the same stuff, but it was a lot of motor too. And that was another reason why he was always good, is really high motor, right?
Yeah.
Played, just never stopped, relentless. I would say this is the best ball he's been playing. And so for Chiefs fans, it's really easy to and wait for that to end. But if it really has been a health thing and an issue, including, you know, mental health, trying to deal with some of the other stuff going on, this might be sustainable. And if that's the case, then Brett Veach's vision for the defense can actually become what it was supposed to be.
Right.
Which is based around Clark and Jones's skill set with Tyrann Mathieu on the backside, except now they also have guys like Juan Thornhill and Legarius Sneed and Melvin Ingram and Willie Gay Jr. and a lot of really solid supporting cast.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's so funny talking about this defense now, this potential ceiling for it feels very different than how it did, you know, earlier in the season when they were playing like really, really poor football.
Mm-hmm. You,
even like then when we were like, well, we don't think they'll be this bad all year, but okay, it was still like, you know, their ceiling is an average defense.
Yes. Oh, no, I mean, and I...
Well, they,
go ahead.
No, I just was going to say they've obviously broke through that already, and his play was part of why I think I assumed the ceiling was average, because I didn't anticipate Clark being able to push himself back to this level.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I was thinking about everything defensively. I wrote a little thing on Arrowhead Report that went up this morning. I was working on last night about like what actually did we think that the turnaround for the defense could look like, and I do think that there was some realm of believability on the idea that they would get to an average defense partway through or late into the season, that there would be some stabilization there, but it being this actually good is not something that I was considering. It seems like, and you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like you have a little bit of hesitance about just going like, yeah, this is who Frank Clark is from this point forward. And I don't know if that's from something specifically that you're seeing or from you not wanting to make, you know, an overreaction snap judgment of some sort. Is there a little bit of hesitance? Do you need to see it a few more games or where are you at in terms of that?
You know, this is one of the things that was so frustrating when dealing with Clark's struggles last year and to start this year. And then he obviously had injury issues in 2019. I think he was a good player when he was healthy in 2019. He was so consistent in Seattle.
Mm.
From his rookie year where he was good to 2016, 2017, 2018, he was very good. He was a very good overall player. He was consistent. And then, you know, he came to Kansas City, and then what you saw was something. And that was one of the things where I viewed him as kind of a safe guy to trade for, because he's been who he was year after year after year. This wasn't like a D Ford situation, right, where he struggled with injuries, and which affected his play, and then had one really good pass rushing year and has struggled with injuries since then. Clark has been incredibly consistent. And so with all of that, this really appears to be a return to who he was for literally three straight years prior to coming to Kansas City. It's just so rare that you see a player recapture that form. And so that's where my hesitancy comes from.
Yeah.
It really isn't based on anything. I mean, he's only 28, right? I mean, these are his peak years. 28, you know, about 26 through 30 is probably maybe 31 is what you think of as like an edge rusher's peak years. And so there's no reason to think that his play should just fall off a cliff again if it really was a health thing. The problem is, I can't figure out if it really was a health thing, and that sounds like what he was intimating earlier this year. And so for me, if I keep seeing it for the rest of the season, I will become convinced that it really was just a health thing this whole time, and that would explain the change in play style as well. But, yeah, the hesitancy is because the lackluster play, and I think he would say that by his standards, because he seems to be a guy who holds himself to high standards. His play was lackluster by his standards. It lasted for a pretty long period of time.
Yeah.
And so I think you need to see at least close to that amount of time before your confidence gets restored, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. And he also had – there was like the numbness in the hand thing from a pinched nerve or whatever, and the stomach stuff. I think he lost like 20 pounds or something. So, I mean, I do think there's a through line there. But I also think that just sort of, you know, if not skepticism, just waiting for a little more – information there makes sense. I thought I heard that in there, and I wanted to get it out. I wanted to hear from it. The last time you wrote about Chris Jones, like, you know, in depth specifically about him was after the Cowboys game, which, of course, if you are a new subscriber to the Chief in the North newsletter, maybe this goes without saying, maybe not. It's okay if you don't get it in your email for a certain day. You can go to the mnchiefsfan.substack.com URL. If you're a subscriber, you can go through all of the things in the archives as well. If you're looking for a little holiday reading. But you wrote about Chris Jones there. I don't want to get, you know, necessarily all the way into what you wrote specifically from the Cowboys game, but I am interested as maybe one of Kansas City's biggest advocates for Chris Jones as a human wrecking ball, what you think it would mean if he can't go on Thursday, in part, you know, for the unit as a whole and how the Chargers try to account for guys like Frank Clark. If Chris Jones isn't out there, what changes defensively?
I mean, he's irreplaceable, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you cannot – he is the best non-Aaron Donald interior pass rusher in the NFL. He's one of the best 5-7 pass rushers in the NFL. You can't replace that, right? Mm-hmm. And the Raiders game, as good as Clark was, Jones was a little better. Mm-hmm. And that's how good Jones is game after game after game. He completely wrecks defensive game plans. Our offensive game plans. And every now and then, and you and I have talked about this, one of the things that makes him so valuable is there are 3 or 4 snaps a game that he completely ruins for an offense, single-handedly. And some people would be like, well, 3 or 4 out of 60? That's not that many. That's an incredibly large number to be able to individually and to do it week after week after week after week, right? Sometimes he does it a few more. Like against the Cowboys, it was like 12. that game was incredible. But he does that, and he's a guy who also does it on a higher percentage on third down. And it's there are multiple times where he stops drives with singular efforts. You're not going to replace that. It becomes much more important that Clark keep up the level of play he's showing, especially with Slater potentially out as well.
Right.
Slater's been playing awesome left tackle for the Chargers. Their depth behind him is not remotely as good.
Mm-mm.
And so if Clark can dominate his matchup, it doesn't matter as much.
Yeah.
Pass rush is still a sum of the parts. And if Ingram and Clark both play really well, and then you maybe have Jaron Reed, who's quietly been playing better after a pretty tough start to the season, not nearly the improvement we've seen from Clark, but there's been better play there, then you can still have a good pass rush on the day.
Yeah.
But it does lower the ceiling, barring like a massive breakout game from, you know, Tershawn Wharton or some incredible game plan from Spags. Because I just don't know if Justin Herbert is the guy you want to try to blitz into oblivion, given the arm talent that he's shown and the receiving weapons that he has. So you can't replace him, but it does make Clark's resurgence all the more important.
I think this might be the longest we've ever gone talking about the defense in a positive, wholly positive way. But I do want to hear outside of the pass rush whenever you look, because we haven't done this show super consistently for a little bit here on a Tuesday. So whenever you look at everything else that has been a part of the turnaround, what's your next favorite part, your next favorite element of the defense that we saw, you know, now on this stretch of just holding teams to single digits on a regular basis, as opposed to the version that we were seeing and screaming about earlier in the season?
There's obviously so much to like. I think if I were going to pick one, even though it's not the most important, I think the consistent improvement in the run defense and defending the sidelines has been fun. Because that's what you asked, right? It was fun.
Sure, yeah.
And so it is the run game is more psychologically damaging than it actually damages the game. Like, we know this, depending on the game plan, you know, and insert all the caveats there, right?
Yes.
Where there are individual situations,
et cetera. Here,
But watching your team get run on consistently is not fun to watch.
Yeah.
Watching the other team hand the ball off and knowing that it's probably going to gain at least 5 or 6 yards, that is a bummer. And it's no fun. But watching your team stuff a run, and you can see why, from the emotional standpoint, why the importance of it was overemphasized for a while. Because a stuffed run is such a positive play.
Right.
It's like, hey, you try to play and it went nowhere,
right?
And your guys got buried, and we stood you up on the line, you know, all that stuff.
It's not as satisfying as a maybe slightly hurried quarterback who misses a pass by a little bit. Same physical result,
Exactly. feels very different because of the teamwork required to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think also I would include that part because, like I said, defending the sidelines, it includes the physicality and speed of Willie Gay Jr., who I believe I might need to write about him again. I actually wrote about him. This one's free, actually.
Yes, this is there for everyone on the Chief of the North newsletter. He's basically giving away most of his content. He's literally giving away this piece on Willie Gay.
And so this is, I called it shrinking the field and just noted that Gay is doing more than people realize in the fact that his speed, his sideline to sideline speed, has helped erase, not completely eradicate because of the roles they're having everyone play, but it's helped erase a very specific weakness of teams doing a lot of quick throws, testing the sidelines, and getting very easy yards on the Chiefs. Those easy yards against the Chiefs have mostly vanished over the course of the last, what, month and a half, I'd say?
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't mean teams never move the ball. It doesn't mean the Chargers won't move the ball. I think they will. They're a gifted team. But generally speaking, the first, like, five or six games of the year, teams were moving the ball easily. You know, short passes to the sidelines were gaining 10, 15 yards. Those rollouts with, you know, a tight end pulling across the line was good for 15 yards of play. Like, I literally wondered to myself, I was like, why doesn't some team just run that play six times in a row?
Yeah, just see what happens.
See if they could defend it once.
Yeah.
And Philly basically did at times.
Yep.
So watching them really improve in those areas that they've struggled, the tackling being so good, I mean, that has been really fun, close to the line of scrimmage and on the sidelines, because it's become, over the last 6 weeks, it's become more like on a defensive snap. You're starting to expect something good to happen as opposed to dreading something bad happening. And I think that shallow portion of the field in those sidelines is a big part of that.
I'm glad that you got there because I did have the Willie Gay story open in a tab whenever I asked you that question, kind of rooting for an answer that would get us there. Because I just think that if you just haven't looked at the GIFs, go to this story and look at the GIFs of Willie Gay looking faster than anyone else in the Chiefs defense, or at least anyone, you know, in the middle of the field has been in a very long time. It's just fun. It looks like, you know, all of my love of football on some level, I think, ultimately, it still to this day, gets viewed through the lens of NFL Street 2 on the GameCube. And I'm telling you, man, Willie Gay plays like he's got a little bit of a game breaker, at least a turbo button. And it's just wonderful.
Absolutely. Inside linebacker is one of those positions that it's not terribly difficult to find and scheme up decent play
mm-hmm.
that doesn't sink your defense,
mm-hmm.
but it is a position to where exceptional play or really fast play, like, you know, you can really add a lot to your defense there.
Yeah.
And that's something that they're finding with Willie Gay Jr., who I think he's got an incredibly high ceiling.
Let's talk about the offensive side a little bit here, because that's where we've spent a lot of our usual conversation time. The Chiefs are in a very funny place right now, where I think that as you've seen the defensive evolution / revolution coming together, the Chiefs have had really two good offensive games, or two offensive performances that felt good, at least to be more subjective about it, and both of them were against the Raiders. So you see Raiders effort one, we've talked about that plenty, but then you get Sunday and you get the last several games all together. Where are you at right now on the offense as a whole, and also in terms of you know, the things that had been going wrong that you think were the most important to now? Is this finally whenever everything clicks together and we're going to see them do it again on Thursday? Or are the Raiders again going to be kind of the blip on the radar?
You know, I've thought about this a lot, right? Because obviously they've had two dominant offensive performances against the Raiders. And really, let's be honest, they weren't even trying in, like, the fourth quarter against the Raiders, even before they replaced everyone this last time.
Yeah.
I think they could have hung 60 or 70 on them.
Mm-hmm. If this was for a BCS ranking, whatever that, however long ago that was still a thing, they could have put up 60 or 70. Yeah, I think you're right. If they needed style points,
yeah,
should be the tiebreaker, by the way. Instead of AFC record, why don't you do style points, and then the Chiefs would definitely have the tiebreaker over the Patriots.
They would win so much because their style points are so much better. But I think it's important to me, the bigger difference in the Chiefs game against the Raiders to me, so there's a couple things going on here. So if you look at, like, their wins against Dallas and Denver, you know, they put up 22, they put up 19. Green Bay, they put up 13. One difference that people would talk about, you know, it's like, oh, this cover two, cover two, cover two, cover two. Honestly, Denver played more cover two than the Raiders did. But go back and look at the Chiefs' cover two stats in previous years with Mahomes and Reed. It's not like this is anything new. Right. They've seen it before. To me, I think people are doing a little too much correlation versus causation. Mm-hmm. Because to me, what you ought to do is, okay, well, you know, 40% of their plays against cover two failed. Well, then what you have to do is look and see why the play failed. Mm-hmm. Did the play fail because of quick pressure by the front four? In that case, it's not a cover two issue. It's a pass blocking issue, mm-hmm. right? Did the play fail because of a drop by a receiver? Well, that's not a cover two issue. Did the play fail because Mahomes had happy feet, like we're talking about, like, say, like the Titans or the Giants game? And I think you see, like, the direction I'm going, right?
Yeah.
What matters is the why. And that's what we talked about a ton after the Packers game, where on my commentary, and I maintain this, that if they shoot themselves in the foot half as much in that game, they probably score two full more extra touchdowns worth mm-hmm. of points. When you get a similar situation, like, say, against Denver, I mean, against Denver, they missed an extra point and a field goal. So let's say they scored 26 instead of 22. Mm-hmm. Would people still view that as a poor offensive day? And they previously would have in the Mahomes era, right? Mm-hmm. Now let's say, you know, they go for it. You know, they don't have a drop, you know, multiple drops that end drives. And even one of them leads to points. So now it's 29. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So what I see is self-inflicted errors, much more so than cover two versus cover one. If you go back and watch some of the Raiders game, some of their big plays were against cover two. Mm. It's not like this is like this mystery thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just a narrative that's taken hold. I think it does affect a team. I think teams playing against the Chiefs' strengths certainly is a good idea. But I think the bigger thing is they made mistakes on their own, basically unsolicited, against, like, say, Dallas, Denver, and Green Bay, but they just didn't make against the Raiders. They mm-hmm. caught, they didn't have nearly as many drops. They didn't, you know, have drops that turned into interceptions like they did against Denver again.
Clyde's fumble bounced back into his chest instead of into a Raider.
Right, exactly. Yeah, imagine that something like that just goes a little bit differently, just one or two plays, and that's where they've had struggles this year. Now, will they ever get out of that? I have no idea, because the last Raiders game didn't get them out of it either. You know, they had a great game against the Washington football team. I mean, they've had good offensive performances. I mean, honestly, their offensive performance against Baltimore was really, really good. They just lost because of a fumble at the end of the game, which is still bugging me to this day, but what are you going to do, right?
Yeah.
So, again, the biggest thing has been unforced errors. Mm-hmm. Penalties at inopportune times. The fact that I think Kelce has played a little hobbled at times this year. The fact that refs are letting Kelce be played as physically as I've ever seen it, mm-hmm. game in and game out. And they're going to until it gets stopped. But really, these drops and the timing of drops, right? The drop percentage, I don't know, is too much higher than in previous years, but their luck and timing has been terrible.
Mm.
That's the bigger – those are the bigger issues, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's going to determine whether or not they continue to get right. And you know, so we'll see. I mean, this is an opportunity for them against a Chargers team that they moved the ball very well against in their first matchup.
Yeah.
They just couldn't stop turning the ball over.
Yeah.
And so if they, you know, let's say the Chargers play cover two, you know, 60% of the time, and the Chiefs score 31, does that mean, you know, the curse is lifted? I think it just means they got out of their own way.
Yeah. I think you mentioned the narrative aspect of it all, which I understand, because I think that, hey, the Chiefs have one type of coverage that turns them back into a pumpkin. I think is a way more interesting thing to talk about from a schematic standpoint than, like, if they just had stickier gloves, this whole season looks different. If their gloves are just 50% stickier than everybody else's. But I also think that makes an absolute ton of sense, because it's also one of the reasons that I think that's an interesting point. I mean, I mentioned this on the podcast. Times are available wherever you get your podcasts. There was the stat of, you know, the Raiders have played the fewest, I can't remember the specific differentiation, but two deep safety, two safety shell, cover two, whatever.
There's some differentiations. But the Raiders in these two games, it was the lowest percentage the Chiefs had faced this year. But also, whenever Patrick Mahomes talked about it after the first game, and he mentioned this a little bit earlier in pressers today as well, he said that, you know, they're kind of working still to that, to two high looks. It's just that ultimately it looked a little bit different to a lot of people who weren't 1,000% sure what they were looking for, perhaps, or whatever the narratives end up being out of there. I also, though, it kind of ends our conversation if you just go, well, if they just stop dropping the ball, I think they'd be fine. It's like, well, yeah, but how do they do that, though, Max? How do they do that, Stephen A? It's like, well, I don't know. They got to catch it and not give it to the other team, I guess. So it's kind of fun. I don't know, it's a weird little space we're in.
Yeah, and it really does. I think that's part of why you're seeing the conversation take the road that it does take, because, like you said, hey, stop dropping the ball and stop doing it at particularly crucial times. It is, like, too easy an answer.
Yeah,
and I think
really
for a lot of people, it feels as though you're not quite making excuses, but you're kind of, like, making it sound like it's easily correctable and not credit what the other team is doing.
Yeah.
And as much as I hate to say it, that really is how I feel, at least in the recent stretch. Like against Tennessee and the Giants, I think Mahomes played poorly,
mm-hmm.
and that was a big issue.
Mm-hmm.
I think before that, they just kept turning the stinking ball over, and they've had various versions of those types of mistakes. And that's where, you know, they apparently something about the Raiders gets them to say, hey, you know what? What if we did catch the ball today?
Yeah.
And the results are, I would almost call, predictable. And so it'll be interesting to watch that against the Chargers and see how it goes against a team that traditionally has played them pretty tough.
Clark Hunt needs to find, like, a practice squad player on every team the Chiefs will play the rest of the season and pay them to go do something disrespectful before the game. That's the
absolutely.
Drive a bus, dance on a logo. I mean, it could literally be anything. Tackle Casey Wolf. Like, I don't. It really does. Insult Kansas City barbecue. Maybe you save that one for the playoffs because I'm not sure the city would recover from that one within a week. But I think that might be the plan. And I'm gonna credit Yannick Ngakoue for the most impactful play of the day, being before the game because he reminded the Chiefs that turnovers are bad. I'm gonna give him credit. Yannick Ngakoue, coach of the year vote for me.
And I think, you know what, you hit on something kind of accidentally there, maybe not accidentally, but like the idea, you know, turnovers, that's an obvious thing, right?
Yep.
And that's where whenever people are like, well, it falls back on coaching, if there's failures of execution, it's like, you don't think they're coaching them to catch and protect the ball or not get stupid penalties or stick their blocks? Like, what do you don't think they're practicing that? And that's where I think you had some comments from the players earlier in the year. It's like, we just need to execute.
Yeah.
And I think in this case, it's often been true.
And the word execute for me at some point, you know, it's like, you know, whenever you just hear a word so many times, if I just go avocado, 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 somewhere in there, I've just started like chanting. I'm not even saying the name of that. Is it a fruit? It's got a seed in the middle, so I think it's technically a fruit. Anyway, if I go guacamole, 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 you know, eventually you lose all meaning there. Patrick Mahomes talks about executing so much that somewhere in there it stopped meaning anything. And then somewhere more recently, it has started to mean something again where I go, oh, you know what? It's a good point. If you just are executing the things that are called, the plays that you're running, and if your pass is good and the receiver catches it, you guys will go back to the Super Bowl again, actually. It kind of is about that. But like we just said, it's not a very satisfying thing to discuss as armchair quarterbacks or whatever.
Absolutely, yeah. It's no fun.
Give me a quick kind of minute-long thought on Thursday Night Football, if you will. Obviously, who knows what could change between now and game time, but I don't know. I'm interested in what you're interested in as this game comes around.
The continued resurgence of Frank Clark is a big, big thing. How the secondary continues to perform without Chris Jones, there's kind of a cheat code. But really the offensive execution, because we've seen the defense perform at a high level now for weeks and weeks, and now I want to see the offense do it for 2 weeks in a row.
Seth, I appreciate you as always. People could appreciate you even more if they went to mnchiefsfan.substack.com or to the bit.ly, bit.ly/SethReallyHatesMoney. That's the actual link that will actually take you there. And you can sign up for $12 for a full year, and it doesn't elevate to a higher price after that if you stay subscribed. And if, you know, maybe in 2022 I'll get Seth to raise the price so you can go lock it in now. Or give one to a Chiefs fan in your life who doesn't listen
listened to this show or doesn't follow Seth on Twitter might not know about the Chief of the North newsletter. It seriously, like, I was going to talk about it regardless, but then partway through earlier, it really did hit me that that is an incredibly good gift for $12 for the Chiefs fan in your life. You could get, like, a tenth of a jersey or make them 100 times smarter as a Chiefs fan, and it's also, like, a fun read. I enjoy what I watch more as I read Seth's breakdowns and know to look for the things that he points out there. So it's a wonderful Christmas gift for you to give to the Chiefs fan in your life. And Seth, as always, thank you for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
You know, no, I'm not Travis Kelce. God, I wish I was, though.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Thanks again to Seth Kizer for being with us here tonight on Almost Entirely Sports. A lot of good stuff from there, as always. And again, another encouragement to go check out the newsletter if you haven't yet. And it really is like a brilliant gift idea. In fact, Ice Pyro on Twitch said they gave their dad a subscription for Father's Day. It's a great gift. It's $12. Think about it. Think about how hard it is to come up with a good gift idea for just all person in your life, theoretically a Chiefs fan. You want to give them something that they'll actually use, that will be good, that's not too expensive, and is it going to be clutter? Are they going to wish they didn't get that gift at all? Are they going to put it somewhere? Where are they going to put it? Chiefs of the North newsletter takes up zero physical space, and it's $12 for a whole year. You can get them the same gift again next year, presumably for $12 more. It's a great idea. One of the things that we talked about there with Seth towards the end on the offensive side of the ball is something that I was pretty sure I knew where he would be headed in terms of the Chiefs' offensive renaissance of these last two games against the Raiders. And I think he's exactly right, and frankly, I came to the conclusion that he came to a while back, I think, if for no other reason than because I have listened to what Seth has pointed to as the problems. Knowing what the actual problems are make the solution a little bit easier to project and to predict. And in this case for him, I get it. I get it for the Chiefs 100% here. I want you to hear from Patrick Mahomes on this topic as well, talking about some of the narratives of playing the two deep safeties. The idea that, you know, that's been the thing that's frustrated the Chiefs. And it has frustrated the Chiefs. I don't think that that's really up for debate. I think if you're going to defend the Chiefs, if that is in your job description, you're an NFL defensive coordinator, you have to try to slow down the Chiefs' offense. If you gave me that assignment, I would say, well, we'll start with playing mostly two high safety shells, try to keep everything in front of us, not get beat over the top. We're going to double and beat the bleep out of Travis Kelce, which we have some good sound on that maybe we'll get to today, maybe we'll get to tomorrow, because we won't have any more press conferences this week with the Thursday night game. But I would start, we're gonna beat the bleep out of Travis Kelce, we're going to have two safeties deep, and we're going to double Tyreek Hill as a part of all of that. See what they do to us there. That's still where I would start, but it's not like the Raiders didn't actually... it's not like the Raiders saw all of that and then decided to do something else, and then that's the reason the Chiefs put up 89 points in their two games against them this year. They did. I mentioned that stat that I don't have up in front of me right now. But the Raiders played the least cover two, or at least two high. I'm trying to get my terms accurate. They played the least two high of any one of the Chiefs have faced at all this year. The Raiders have the two lowest percentages. I think that's interesting. I think it's probably part of the story. I do not think it's the entire story. Rudy, I cannot remember for the life of me. Did I leave the question at the beginning here of this clip for Patrick Mahomes? I think I might have. I think this was a Sam McDowell joint.
This is the Raiders D and carryover clip?
Yeah.
No question.
All right, then I'll try to do my best to remember it precisely. Because Sam McDowell of the Kansas City Star, the reigning Sam of the sports section, by the way, which...
Shouts to Sam Mellinger.
We'll make some... I bet that...
Shouts to Sam.
I bet, Rudy, that the best gift you could give him would be to pronounce his last name correctly.
Mellinger.
It's okay. The Chiefs' PR has been getting it wrong for years now. one's all right.
Everybody was talking about him today, how much they love, like, his writing. I'll be honest. I've listened to him a ton on the radio. And yeah. I like listen to him talk.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, his writing's great, too. But I also, like, I really like listening to the man talk.
We might take some time to suck up to the new Royals VP of Communications.
And we're going to get that access. We better.
I like the idea that everyone is saying nice things about Sam purely because they're hoping that they get 7 minutes with Brady Singer next year.
I just know.
Think about that.
A couple years ago with spring training, Petro had me basically chasing around Swanee all day, harassing him. So, Sam, if you ever find me doing that to you going forward, just know it's probably Sarin Petro's fault.
And I think at that point, it's good for everybody. Makes your life easier. Because you can just blame Sarin. Anywho, McDowell, the other Sam, is allowed to call him disrespectfully. You hear that ambulance out there? That's actually for me. Because McDowell's going to murder me on Twitter.
McDowell's now he who remains.
That's right. That's
Sam
right.
Sam who remains.
The Sam who remains. But he asked Mahomes, and he acknowledged the thing that I wanted to mention, which is that Mahomes talked about this a little bit when they played the Raiders the first time and said, well, really, they didn't play as much too deep safety, but they were always kind of working to that point anyway. So McDowell and Mahomes both note that, like, this is not a silver bullet or a silver and black bullet or whatever that the Raiders have refused to shoot. There's more to it. But here's Mahomes on what the Raiders did, what they've done against the Raiders, and then also how much of that they can carry over going forward.
Yeah, I mean, they were kind of the original. If you look at back to when Gus Bradley was at the Chargers, they were the original defense to kind of set back and try to make us drive the entire field. And so, I mean, I think you've seen me have success against that defense this year at all years because I've had to deal with it kind of the entire season of be patient and take the stuff underneath. And so I think, guys, we just executed really good those two games that we played against them. So it'll be a similar concept that I'm sure that they'll try to do to us this week. Well, they'll play some shell coverages and stuff like that, but I'm sure they'll come up and play some man coverage as well. And I think guys just have to execute, and we have to not turn the ball over and go out there and score points.
All right, that's interesting, but it's not as interesting as what Fletch NE said on Twitch.
I just saw this too.
He said, folks on the zone said they thought JB would finish in last place of a punt, pass, and kick contest at 8-10.
They haven't seen me throw.
Sorry, what? I'm not a good punter, and I'm guessing my kick would not be awesome. But I'd put myself maybe on the medal stand in terms of, like, former football players among the on show hosts and producers.
You're getting a medal easy.
I got a chooch.
I've seen you throw.
I've got film on this. What is that? I got to make some phone calls. I'll make a more important one whenever we call Craig Stout of KC Sports Network next.